Welcome to Through the Word, leading you on a journey through the entire Bible, one chapter at a time. Today, Chris Langham guides us through the Old Testament book of Numbers. Now to Pastor Chris.
Numbers 21 on Through the Word, as we arrive at the very first battle. And with the battle, we march head on into some tough questions about justifiable war, the wrath of God, and the love of God. We knew it was coming. The Promised Land was never going to be easy. The Canaanites lived there, wicked, evil, and not about to let the people of God walk in without a fight. In fact, they don't let them walk in at all. The Israelites are not in the land yet, but the fight is already on. Verse 1. When the Canaanite king of Arad, who lived in the Negev, heard that Israel was coming along the road to Atharim, he attacked the Israelites and captured some of them. Ready or not, here they come. The Israelites just got close, and the king of Arad attacked already. You don't have to go looking for evil. Evil will find you. Now don't forget why the Israelites are here. God gave them this land. God pronounced judgment on the wicked people of the land, and he called on Israel to destroy them. So in verse 2, then Israel made this vow to the Lord, "If you will deliver these people into our hands, we will totally destroy their cities." The Lord listened to Israel's plea and gave the Canaanites over to them. They completely destroyed them and their towns, so the place was named Hormah. And so, the first battle is a victory, not by Israel's strength, but by the will of God. And here we have the dilemma, God calling for the destruction of the Canaanites. How do you balance the wrath of God with the love of God? We'll find a solid dose of each one in this chapter. So how do they go together? God's wrath. He hates evil, righteously hates evil, and punishes it. God's love. He cares for people, even evil people, and forgives them. So how does it work together? Now, it is not my place, nor is it yours, to make God into what we think he should be. He is. Apart from all our conjectures and reasoning, God is. So I will not attempt to defend God's actions nor define his nature on my terms. But it is our place to understand him better. That's what the Bible is for. God reveals himself through the Word. And parts of it I wrestle with. God's wrath and God's love both amaze me. And they are both essential to the gospel. The book of Romans begins the gospel with the wrath of God poured out against all the godless and wicked. We all deserve wrath. But in the same gospel, God shows us how much he loves us. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Do you see it? Godlessness deserves wrath, but Jesus died for the ungodly. So which one is he? A God of wrath or a God of love? The answer is both. Now back to the Canaanites. Who were they? They lived in the Promised Land, they were evil, and God commanded the Israelites to destroy them. That's the hard part, of course. But back up a step. Just how evil were they? God calls their practices detestable, as in vile and wicked. If you believe that selling children into sexual slavery should be punished, then you believe the Canaanites should be punished. Temple prostitution was a vile practice. If you believe that murder is wrong, that killing a child and calling it an act of worship to some hideous god should be a crime, then you would agree with God's judgment of Canaan. And that was just the beginning. I will spare the details for the squeamish, but according to the Bible and archaeological evidence, the Canaanites had become wicked to the core. And God, the righteous judge of all mankind, witnessed the evil and cruelty of the Canaanites, and he judged. What's amazing is how long God waited. Genesis 15 explains that God waited 400 years for the sin of the people to be complete. That's a lot of second chances. But when their sin was complete, God called on Israel to bring judgment on Canaan. The Canaanites were to be utterly destroyed. Like a disease-infested animal, they had to be put down to prevent their practices from spreading. The sad truth is, the Israelites did not utterly destroy them. They left many, and their sin and all their detestable practices did spread to the Israelites. One more thing to know about the Canaanites. They are also a picture. Don't forget typology. The Canaanite peoples are a picture of sin in our lives, and God calls us to conquer sin and to leave nothing. A little bit of sin left in your life will spread like the disease that it is. The battles are a picture of the sanctification process, so watch for this as we read on. We also are in a battle, but ours is not against flesh and blood. So watch for lessons and insights about your battle against sin and against demons. Already in the first battle, we see that sin doesn't wait for us. It comes after us and takes some of us captive. And when your friend is captured, we're called to the rescue. Now, following their victory over Arad, the Israelites travel around Edom. But the terrain there is hard, and the people grow impatient of the way. So in verse 5, they spoke against God and against Moses and said, "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? There is no bread, there is no water, and we detest this miserable food." It's back again. "We're all going to die, man." They won a battle but lost the victory. They still didn't trust, and in their unbelief, they spoke against God himself. That's called blasphemy. So in verse 6, "Then the Lord sent venomous snakes among them. They bit the people, and many Israelites died. The people came to Moses and said, 'We sinned when we spoke against the Lord and against you. Pray that the Lord will take the snakes away from us.' So Moses prayed for the people." This story just got interesting. Deadly snakes are biting the Israelites. God's wrath. Don't miss the symbolism. It was a snake that tempted Eve and introduced the evil that would ultimately kill us. The snakes in the camp were a picture of what was already happening. The sin of unbelief was slithering its way around to destroy them. But then, a way of salvation, God's love. Verse 8. "The Lord said to Moses, 'Make a snake and put it up on a pole. Anyone who is bitten can look at it and live.' So Moses made a bronze snake and put it up on a pole. Then when anyone was bitten by a snake and looked at the bronze snake, they lived." So the salvation comes by a bronze snake on a pole. Look at the bronze snake and live. What is going on? Believe it or not, Jesus explained it for us. This very story is the lead-in to John 3:16. The verse is immediately before it. "Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that everyone who believes may have eternal life in him." This is the very heart of the gospel. The next words are, "For God so loved." The Israelites look to the snake on a pole as we look to Jesus on the cross. Sin is killing us, but salvation is free. We just have to look up. Look to the cross in faith and be saved. But why would a bronze snake picture Jesus? Doesn't the snake represent sin? Yes, exactly. Jesus, the one who knew no sin, became sin for us. He took the deadly snake, the sin of the world, upon himself. On the cross, we don't just see Jesus, we see our own sin. And bronze is the metal of judgment. God judged sin on the cross so that we wouldn't be judged. The Israelites still deserved the snakes, but they were rescued. The wrath of God meets the love of God.
Join us next time on Through the Word as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. Start your own journey through the Bible with our web and mobile apps at throughtheword.org. Our apps are free, so tell a friend. We're listener supported, so thanks for giving. Chris Langham is the founder of Through the Word Ministries and pastor of Refuge Long Beach in Long Beach, California. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.